Next is on the matter of Douglas Long. May we please have appearances of counsel?
Yes, it's Deputy Ethics Counsel Hillary Horton on behalf of the Office of Attorney Ethics.
May it please the court, Michael Testa, Sr. on behalf of Douglas Long.
And that's Mr. Long with you?
Yes.
You'll also have the opportunity, if you'd like, to address the court.
Okay.
Ms. Horton.
May it please the court, this matter is a motion for final discipline following a guilty plea in the United States District Court for the District of New Jersey to one count of tax evasion. Four members of the Disciplinary Review Board voted to disbar. Two members voted for a 3-year suspension, which was the quantum of discipline originally recommended by the Office of Attorney Ethics. The Office of Attorney Ethics acknowledges that this is a close and unfortunate case. However, on balance, the OAE has determined that the position taken by the majority of the DRB, that respondent should be disbarred, is justified. The OAE focuses in particular on a few factors that favor disbarment. The first factor is respondent's status as an elected official during the time frame underlying the criminal conduct. As such, he not only had a higher obligation to satisfy his tax liability, but as a county freeholder, he would have known that the government's local, state, and federal rely upon tax income to fund all the necessary services for the residents. The second factor is respondent's particular use of his bookkeeper, Ms. Redmond, as a confederate to his crime. Respondent hid income by directing his bookkeeper to misclassify personal expenses such as tuition for his children, utilities for his personal residences, and student loan payments as business expenditures. By doing this, respondent implicated his bookkeeper in his criminal conduct, putting her reputation and potentially her liberty in jeopardy for his personal financial gain. The sentencing court, as well as the DRB, and now the OAE, has expressed concern that respondent may have manipulated his less sophisticated subordinate in his crimes by instructing her to falsify the law firm records for his benefit.
Has the OAE investigated that alleged manipulation?
I will say that there was a previous investigation that resulted in a reprimand for some financial record keeping, and I'm not at liberty to discuss any active investigations that may be going on.
It was not investigated as part of the matter that led to the reprimand, I gather.
Well, I think on some level it was, but it wasn't perhaps the focus of that investigation. That focused more on the nuts and bolts of the problems with the record keeping, not so much the relationship between Ms. Redmond and respondent. An additional factor, moving on from Ms. Redmond, is that respondent engaged in tax fraud following the attendance, speaking of the reprimand, he was required to attend a trust and business accounting course that was sponsored by the Office of Attorney Ethics, and the tax evasion subject before us today was after that course. However, that course should have served to highlight the importance of scrupulous business accounting practice and record keeping. The sentencing court and the DRB correctly concluded that respondent's crime evidenced a pattern of dishonest conduct that existed over a long period of time and was used to manipulate the finances of the law firm to personally benefit the respondent, who simply believed that he just paid too much in taxes and didn't have any other reason to justify his conduct. The crime was motivated by greed and not some particular form of need for himself or his family. That the financial crime, and in particular tax crime, undermines the public's faith in government and destroys the unique voluntary nature of our tax system, and seemingly rewards those such as respondent who are willing to manipulate that system for selfish benefit. The tax loss here was calculated at $388,362, which is an amount greater than the attorneys generally discussed in the DRB and my brief that were previously suspended for tax evasion, but not quite as great as some of the tax loss caused by some of the disbarred attorneys who, as you read the DRB decision, often over $1 million of tax loss for those respondents. Restitution was paid at sentencing. and even balancing respondents' unselfish acts of personal charity and his more public acts of political goodwill against his motivation, which seems to be greed, to violate the federal tax law, the OAA determined that the DRB majority's decision recommendation that respondent be disbarred is sound, and we would join in that recommendation before the court. If there's no further questions, I will submit on the record established below.
I have one question, if you could just wait.
Yeah.
There's an allegation contained in the pre-sentence report in the federal matter, a statement which is disputed, that Mr. Long pressured his bookkeeper to lie and take blame. Is that accurate?
Well, that is certainly what...
Is that in the PSR?
Yes, that exists in the PSR, but I should say just for completeness that as you read the sentencing transcript, it is quite strongly disputed by defendant's counsel during
Indeed.
Yeah.
And it remains a disputed allegation.
It does.
Thank you. Questions? Anyway?
Thank you, Mayor. Please, the court. I guess I would like to start, before I get into some of the factual background here, which really isn't greatly disputed, except for the one fact that, Chief Justice, you referred to, and that is something in the sentencing memorandum that talks about the bookkeeper being coerced by Mr. Long. That was adamantly disputed, vehemently opposed, and there are no facts within the record to support that allegation. It was an allegation. And that's important for two reasons. One, it's been referred to by the OAE, especially in their most recent letter, where they changed their position and indicate that rather than recommending the 3-year suspension retroactive to the date that my client voluntarily surrendered his license in May of 2020, but they use the fact that the DRB referred to, and it's not a fact, they use the portion of the DRB decision where there is a reference to the bookkeeper being coerced. The DRB relied upon that as one of the factors. The OAE relied upon that as one of the factors for reversing their position in their letter. I think it's point 2 of their letter. There is no evidence in the record of that. There's no statement from the bookkeeper. There's no affidavit from the bookkeeper. There's no testimony from the bookkeeper to that effect. The other factor relied upon by Ms. Horton in reversing their position that a 3-year suspension would be adequate, again, retroactive to May of 2020, was that my client was an elected official, which he was an elected official. I think during at least part of the time that the tax evasion is alleged to have occurred, and that was 2012, 2013, and 2015. So we're talking several years ago that this is alleged to have occurred, and my client admitted to his guilt in federal court to the one count of tax evasion. But, Your Honors, the facts that he was an elected official, the fact that he was an elected official, was known to the OAE at the time they made the recommendation in their brief to the DRB that a 3-year suspension would be adequate, would be appropriate, is the appropriate discipline, and not only would be the appropriate discipline for my client's conduct, but also would be sufficient to ensure that the public would maintain its trust in the judicial system and the legal system.
May I ask you a question going back to the first point?
Certainly.
I happen to agree that we should not rely on a disputed fact as to which there's no evidence and no finding in the record.
Right.
There was no hearing with respect to that. There's no finding by the DRB, but it's a very serious allegation. And it goes to the matter that is in front of us. It seems unlikely that there would have been a reprimand in the 2016 matter had that been known, had that been found. My question is, should we direct the OAE to conduct an expeditious investigation into the matter and hold this so that we can resolve it? It may resolve in your client's favor, and it may not, but it strikes me as a relevant and serious matter that we shouldn't just ignore. Your thoughts?
Well, my thoughts are that, and I think Ms. Horton refers to this, that probably, and I wasn't there, I wasn't part of that investigation. I didn't represent Mr. Long at that particular ethics hearing. But my understanding is that the bookkeeper was questioned with respect to some improprieties in the bookkeeping, that she admitted that she had made mistakes, that there were errors committed by her, and never once made any reference to the fact that she did this as a result of some type of coercion on the part of Mr. Long.
I gather that happened later. She told the FBI something differently at a later period in time?
That's what seems to be in the sentencing memo, yes. But there was no affidavit to that effect.
Should we try to get to the bottom of this before resolving this matter that is in front of us now?
Well, here's the troubling thing. I find it troubling, number one, that the OAE reversed their position. And I understand that the decision is going to be the Supreme Court's decision. Whether the OAE said, let's just give them a reprimand or give them disbarment, ultimately, it's your decision to make. But what changed from the time that the OAE presented their brief to the DRB until last week when the letter came that they were changing their position? Nothing. The case law hasn't changed. There isn't new precedent that has been established by a decision of this court. We look at Gottesman, we look at Klein, we look at Rich, all cited in the briefs. Even the OAE relied upon Gottesman and Klein. And Klein was a case where there was an individual who pled guilty to tax evasion, and in addition to pleading guilty to tax evasion, entered a plea of guilty to a criminal conspiracy charge. And one of the aggravating factors at that point in time was that Mr. Klein failed to even alert the OAE that he was under indictment, which we don't have here. My client was forthright. As soon as he got charged, as soon as he was indicted, he advised the OAE, he voluntarily surrendered his license, and he complied. So my concern with that, Chief Justice, would be that we're just delaying this even more so when he has been suspended now for just about 3 years. It was May of 2020. So I don't know what an expedited proceeding would be, because here we're talking about things that go back to 2012. So we're already 11 years back in time. So I would respectfully submit that a decision should be made on this case. And if there's another case coming down the road, I'm sure that the OAE is going to be following up on that. In any event, my client was admitted to the bar in 1999. At the time of sentencing, several individuals wrote letters, several individuals appeared at the time of sentencing, talking about the good deeds that Mr. Long did in the course of the practice of law. And one of them talked about they had a charity they founded for children. And she testified before Judge Hillman that he was there. He represented that charity pro bono. And I know that lawyers do pro bono work because we're required to do it, but he went over and above the one time a year assignment that is given to attorneys, or two assignments a year that they get. He represented a charitable foundation on a pro bono basis and helped them raise money to assist children in need of money. You see in the record reference to helping someone who was disabled get a wheelchair. You saw Mr. Todd Edwards, who testified before Judge Hillman as to the charitable acts that my client was doing at the time for the NAACP and some other charitable organizations. So they are mitigating factors. Judge Hillman found that those mitigating factors were sufficient for him to depart from the sentencing guidelines in the federal court, and he did so. He departed from those guidelines. But nonetheless, my client was sentenced to 14 months in federal prison. He paid his penalty for that. So, yes, we know that discipline is partially punitive, although that should not be the main goal, as the cases say, that we should be more aware of trying to ensure the public trust in this system. But I submit to you respectfully that after that many years of practice, the charitable good deeds he's done, the law practice that he maintained Being an elected official, I know it cut against him with respect to his position of trust with the public, but his conduct in evading taxes had nothing to do with his position as an elected official, and it had nothing to do with his position as an attorney. This is a crime that could have just as easily been committed by someone who owned a pizzeria, as opposed to being a practicing attorney. It wasn't client money. Clients were not harmed. In fact, you see nothing in the record about clients complaining about the representation that was provided by Mr. Long. And I just submit that the three-year suspension that the court imposed in the Gottesman and the Klein cases and the Rich case are the appropriate penalty here. And I respectfully submit that he should be returned to the practice of law. Let him get on doing the good deeds that he did in the past. Let him get on being a contributing member of society, a contributing member of the legal profession. He's learned his lesson. God knows what he's been through over the past several years. You can all imagine the effect that something like this has had on not just himself, but his family and those close to him. I think that when you look at the case law and you look at the crime and the elocution that my client presented to Judge Hillman in the federal court, you'll come to the conclusion that 3 years is more than sufficient. And I respectfully ask that that be retroactive to when he voluntarily surrendered his license in May of 2020.
Questions, anyone? Thank you. Would you like to consult with your client, see if he wants to address the court?
Let me get this out of your way. Yes, he will be addressing the court, Chief Justice.
Thank you. Mr. Long?
Thank you, Chief Justice. Thank you, Justice, for allowing me to speak today. And I made a huge mistake. I knew that the books were bad. I knew that it was pretty much in my benefit. I knew that I should have done something about it. I didn't. The attorney for the OAE mentioned greed. I'm not sure it was greed. I've done over 250 pro bono cases in my career. I'm happy to help. I think it was more arrogance and me thinking that I was better than everybody else. And it was a huge mistake. And I apologize for that. I apologize for taking your time today. I'm embarrassed. I'm mortified. Mortified for my family, for my kids. I always said my father was the greatest man I ever met. And he's passed, but that'll never change. I've always wanted that for my kids. And that's really not happening right now. Their father went to prison for a crime that he readily admits he committed. And, I'd like to continue to practice law because I enjoy it. It's an honor. It's a privilege. I think I'm fairly decent at it. But I'd also like to continue to practice law so that I could start to rebuild my kids' self-esteem and belief in their father. It's got to be devastating to them. And I'd really like to start working to earn that back for them so they can walk around with their heads held high. Thank you for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Ms. Horton, could you come back to the center? I just have a couple of questions. The question that I raised, it's a straightforward allegation that involves perhaps two witnesses and quite likely not much else, not much documentation. How long would it take the OAE? I'm not asking you to tell us anything that you're not at liberty to discuss, but how long would it take to conduct that investigation?
Well, I mean, I think some of the allegations involve FBI agents, so I think that can be kind of the complicating factor, not so much calling Ms. Redmond and bringing her in for an interview. So I feel very uncomfortable answering that. I just don't know.
How long would it take for the OAE to conduct the investigation without the FBI's cooperation?
I mean, I shouldn't think that would be, very complicated. It would probably be akin to months,
And at the end of a preliminary investigation, you would be in a position either to proceed or to tell us that you will not be proceeding?
I mean, I suppose we could do that. That's not our practice, generally speaking. But of course, if that was the request, we could do so.
Thank you. Is there anything you wanted to add on that point? You're welcome to come to the center if you do.
Thank you for the opportunity. I think. Thank you for your candor, Ms. Horton. I think that enunciates my concern because we don't have any control over that timeline. And this could just go on for months and months and months and months. And
well, we have control.
Well, not over their timeline.
No, we do.
A valid concern, and that's why we ask.
Well, if there is some control over the timeline, I take back that statement. I didn't think there would be that kind of control over them conducting the investigation and whether the FBI is going to have to get involved or not. I there's a lot of what ifs that I don't have. Somebody at a higher pay rate than me has those answers.
Understood.
Thank you.
We'll take the matter under advisement.